We're in the middle of Torah Lamed in Likutei Moran Chelek Aleph. We're up to Paragraph Vov. In our Likutei Moran, it's page 97, the right-hand column, about a third of the way down the page. So far, Rav Ben is on this Torah Likutei Moran started talking about a person being zeichet to understand Hasogas Elokus, heavenly wisdom, and how it's impossible to be able to understand that directly, but rather a person has to be able to have something smaller in which the Hasogas Elokus should be contained, and thereby the person should be able to have access to it. And that something smaller, Rabbi Nezal called Seichel HaTachtoin or Malchus, through which a person is zeichet to receive and to understand Hasogas Elokus. And he said it takes a very great rabbi, a very great tzaddik, to be able to do this, to be able to take Hasogas Elokus, heavenly wisdom, and bring it down and be mitzamtzem it into Seichel HaTachtoin in a way that people on a lower level should be able to understand it and benefit from it. And Rabbi Nezal showed how that's connected to the hair. Hair is a form of this Seichel HaTachtoin, the black hair being tzimtzumim through which the Seichel of the Moyach comes out. Rabbi Nezal spoke about Avram Avinu specifically, that he was an example of a tzaddik who was zeichet to this Seichel HaTachtoin, the fact that the Torah says he had a daughter whose name was Bakoil Bas, which means a daughter, also refers to the pupil of the eye, the black dot in the eye, which represents this Malchus, the Seichel HaTachtoin, in which is received and contained the Hasogas Elokus, the Seichel HaElyon. Avram Avinu had that. Then Rabbi Nezal showed about Moshe Rabbeinu, how Hashem first revealed himself to Moshe Rabbeinu, also in this Seichel HaTachtoin. There it was called Balabas Eish. Again, this word Bas over there, referring to this Basayin, this Seichel HaTachtoin, through which Moshe Rabbeinu was going to receive the Hasogas Elokus. Then Rabbi Nezal explained that one of the most important things a person needs to be zeichet to this Seichel HaTachtoin, which is Malchus, is to be zeichet to be Soinei Botza, to be perfectly honest and trustworthy when it comes to dealing with money, to despise illegal money or somebody else's money, or moisrois, a person having stuff that they don't really need. And then Rabbi Nezal also stressed the fact that a person who zeichet to this Seichel HaTachtoin, this Malchus, has to be careful to draw chius into it. And that chius comes from the Oyer HaPonim. Rabbi Nezal explained that Oyer HaPonim shines especially on Yontif. He went on to explain that every mitzvah that a person does is a unit of simcha, in a sense, Pikudei Hashem Yishorim Samchei Lev, and the simcha of each and every mitzvah that a Jew does in general throughout the year, the time when it really does its thing is on Yontif. That's when the simcha of all the mitzvahs is gathered together and goes into the heart. Just like the Pasuk says, Nosato Simcha Balibi, that within a human being, the main center for simcha is the heart, so too within the year. Rabbi Nezal explained that the heart of the year is the Yomim Tovim. Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos are called the heart of the year. He showed that how they represent the mother, Eile Moyade Hashem, Rosh Tevois Imi, the mother is Bina, Bina is the heart. And Rabbi Nezal showed that especially on these Yomim Tovim, all of this simcha is gathered together in the heart. And therefore, a Jew who zeche to receive on Yontif, in other words, to be mechabe, to show the proper respect to Yontif, and to get the full benefit from Yontif that they're supposed to, the Pasuk says, Lev Sameach Yetiv Ponim, that when the heart is full of simcha, that's what really lights up the face. So that this Oyer HaPonim that a Jew is supposed to receive, especially on Yontif, comes from the simcha of all the mitzvahs that the person did throughout the whole year, being gathered into the heart. The heart being those Yomim Tovim. That turns on this light in the face, and this light of the face is what's Mechaye the Malchus. That's what gives chius to this Seichel HaTachtoin. This is what we learned till now. Now Rabbi Nezal is going to go into another very important part of this process of dealing with this Malchus, this Seichel HaTachtoin. We explained, I think we mentioned, if I'm not mistaken, in the last year or in a previous year, that Malchus, whenever we talk about Malchus, Seichel HaTachtoin, that represents the lowest Madrega within Kedusha. A cycle of Kedusha starts with Malchus on bottom, and then you have Yesoid and Hoid and Netzach rising up to Chochmah, to the Moichin. because of the fact that Malchus is all the way on the bottom, it's the last level down of Kedusha, it's always considered to be the closest to the Tumah. And it's always in danger of being harmed and pulled down by the Tumah. One of the examples that the Sifrei Kabbalah give of this is the fact that in Hashem's name Yud Kei Vav Kei, the last letter He there represents the Malchus. And in the He, you have two parts. You have one part that's more, the way a He is written, it's written like a Dalit with a little extra piece. That little extra piece sort of is standalone. It's hanging, it's not attached to any solid portion of the letter. And the Sifrei Kabbalah explain that when the klipos, when the forces of Tumah latch onto it, they pull down on it, they try to pull it down to them. The Pasuk says, Ragleho yordo ismoves, that the feet of the Kedusha, which is synonymous with the Malchus, sometimes goes down into the hands of Moves. Moves means death, the Tumah, the Malach HaMoves, the Soton, or the klipos, all that same area. When that happens, the hay becomes a kuf. A kuf is a situation where the leg, actually the leg got pulled down and extended, pulled downward. And the reason why it's a kuf specifically is because the word kuf in Hebrew, not the letter kuf, but the word kuf or kaif means a monkey. And a monkey is the nickname that's given to the klipos, the tumah, because their main key to success is that they monkey the Kedusha. They mimic the Kedusha. Just like a monkey is something that's animal and that's foolish and silly compared to human, and yet a monkey imitates a human being. You watch it eating or doing other mannerisms where it seems as if it's almost a person. It's almost a person, but it's a yo-yo. It's a monkey. In other words, you want to really make fun of a person and say he's a non-person, you say he's a monkey, ape, that kind of thing. The Sifrei Kabbalah say that this is what the Satan does. For example, if the Torah says that doing mitzvahs is supposed to be sweet and wonderful, the Satan gives people other things and makes them think that this is going to be just as sweet and wonderful. A person will have a big swimming pool and this. Notice whatever somebody else can get out of religion, I'll give it to you in other ways. I'll give it to you in other ways and a billion times better. Imagine Shabbos, how restricted a Jew is, hands are tied, feet are tied, can't do anything, can't eat anything, can't do anything you want to do, all of these things, whereas the Satan tries to give a false impression as if he's offering the real package. He knows what real sweetness is, what real goodness is. Now, Rabbi Nazal says, Sifkot Nvov, Ulefamim Shenoifel Chas V'Sholem B'chinas HaMalchus D'Kedusha, at times, the Malchus Dikdusha falls. Bechinois Chochmatato, the Malchus Dikdusha, which is synonymous with Chochmatato, the lower level wisdom. Where does it fall? Ligolus Shel Arba Malchius. It falls into the exile of the four kings. When we talk about the Malchus Dikdusha, that's the Malchus of Bnei Yisrael. We know that there was that's when the Jews are in their glory, in their success, when they're in Eretz Yisrael and they have their own king, etc. There were four special times when the Jews were sent into exile, where they were put, their malchus went away, went bye-bye. The leadership and the authority and the royalty of Klal Yisrael went away, and they went under the kingdom and authority and rule of kings of the Goyim, be it Nebuchadnezzar, be it Porasumodai, be it the Greeks, be it the Romans, these four major powers subjugating Bnei Yisrael, having the Malchus Dikdusha under their thumb in a sense. So Rabbi Nizal says, there are times when the Malchus of Kedusha falls into the Golus of the four kings. Ki HaMalchus Hu Bechinas Dalid, because Malchus in general is symbolized by the letter Dalid. Begin the leslo migarmo klum. The Zohar Kodesh says, because it has nothing of its own. The word deles means nothing. Malchus, we always speak about Malchus as being simply a vessel. It isn't really a light. It simply is something into which all the other spheroids shine their light into. It's a keli which receives all the light and channels it and passes it on to people. Gives it on to people. Just as the Moshe of the Zohar HaKadosh says, Kol hanecholim hoilchem al hayam, that you have a yam, the Mediterranean Sea. There's all kinds of different streams and lakes and everything that flow into it, that fill it and give it its strength and power. And the words El Hayam make up the word Elikim. Kol Hanecholim Hoyach Melayam. Elikim is one of the nicknames of Malchus. There's a pasuk Velikim Malki Mikedem. Elikim is my king. So here also, the Zohar HaKadosh always says that Malchus is something which has no light of its own. The moon is the symbol of Malchus. The moon has no light of its own. It's simply a reflection of the light of the sun. So now Rabbi Nezal says, begin the less lamigar maklum, because it has nothing of its own. Kiim al yedei anfei hasechel ho elyoin hamispashtim l'shom. What gives the Malchus any light, any nourishment? The branches of sechel that extend from above, from Chochma, from Sechel Ha'elyoin, that feed into it, that's what gives it its light. It has nothing, there's no light called Malchus. It's only on the receiving end. Just like the comparison of a husband and wife. The husband is the one who's called the Mashpia. The wife is the one who's supposed to be the Mekabel. She's not expected, in a sense, to be producing on her own. She's the one who's expected to receive the nourishment from her husband. Vegam hi klula midalid olamos, and the Malchus is also composed of the four worlds. Ki bechol olam v'olam yesh bechinas Malchus, bechinas chochma tato, shehi bechinas hachochma hamenaheges es olam kanal. Because in each and every one of the four basic worlds, it has its Malchus, its chochma tato, which leads it. We know that in the Sifrei Kabbalah, there is a concept of four major worlds. The world that we live in, we human beings, and lahavdil animals, and goyim, etc., is called the Olam Ho'asiya. That's the lowest world. The world above us, the world of the angels, is called the Olam Hayitzira. The world above that, the world of the throne of Hashem, is called the Olam Habriya. And the world above that, the fourth world, is called the Olam Ho'atzilus. Atzilus miloshen etzel. It's the closest. Etzel means close by. It's the closest thing to Hashem's infinite light, in a sense. These are the four worlds, and each one of these worlds is considered to have its own set of spheros. Meaning, there's the Chochmah of Atzilus, the Bina of Atzilus, the Chesed of Atzilus, the Gvura of Atzilus, so on and so forth, and the Malchus of Atzilus. Then within Bria, there's the Malchus of the Olam HaBria, and the Malchus of Asiya. This is based, one of the psukim in the Torah that shows us this, is there's a pasuk that says, Kol ma sheborach, the pasuk says, Kol hanikra bishmi ulichvoidi berosiv yitzartiv afasisiv. Hashem says, everything that has my name upon it, for my honor, I created it. Berosiv means to create, yitzartiv means to create, Af Asisiv also means to create. And this is hinting to these three worlds, Bria, Yetzira, and Asiya, which receive from this uppermost light called the Olam HaAtzilus. So now Rabbi Nezal says that each one of the worlds has its Malchus, its Chochmah Tato, which is the Chochmah that's Manhig that world. The term Manhigus, rulership, is always the Malchus. Now, a person would say, logically, strange. Leadership, it would sound reasonable, sensible to say that the leadership of a world should be the Chachma, the highest sphera. And yet we find that Malchus is always humbleness. Those two go together. The Gemara says about Hashem himself, B'mokoyim sh'atamoytzei gidulosoy, shom atamoytzei anvesanusoy. That where you find Hashem's greatness, you find Hashem's modesty. Whenever we talk about leadership in Klal Yisrael, we're talking about humbleness and modesty. It says that, I believe it's Hillel HaZokein, who had 80 students. His greatest student was Rabbi Yonasan Ben Uziel. The Gemara says he was so great that when he would learn Torah, the intensity of the light of his Torah was so bright that if a bird flew overhead, it got burned to a crisp. That's how fiery his Torah was. The Gemara says his smallest student was Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. And the Gemara says Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai knew the entire Torah forwards and backwards. He knew the languages of the animals, the birds, the trees, everything. Now, after Hillel HaZokein passed away, the one to become the chief rabbi of Klal Yisrael was Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. So the question is strange. The Gemara itself says that he was the smallest of the students. If he was the smallest, why did he become the chief rabbi? The answer is, that's what made him chief rabbi. Leadership comes from being small, humble. So here also, Malchus, which in a sense is the humblest of the spheroids, it's the leader of a whole set of spheroids. Now Rabbi Nizal says, V'chol ha-chochmois shel ho'akum, kulam heim tachas ha-chochma tator hanal. All the wisdoms of Avodah Zorah or of the Goyim are under chochma tator. In other words, when we talk about Kedusha, in Kedusha there's chochma ilah and chochma tator. Under chochma tator, under the Malchus, is the realm of Tumah, the realm of the Klipois, the realm of the Goyim. So any wisdom that they have is beneath the Chochma Tato of the Jews on that level, on that particular level. Umisham Yoinek Chochmosom. And their wisdoms draw their nourishment from the Chochma Tato, which is from the Malchus. Ukishayoinchim Chasisholm Yoiseme Horoilohem. And when things go wrong, where the wisdoms of the Goyim are able to draw more than what they're supposed to be drawing. They're supposed to be drawing in a certain limited way from Kedusha. But when that gets out of hand, when they draw more than what they're supposed to draw, Azai Mizgabrim Chas V'Sholom, then they become strong, V'Nase Memsheles Hadalet Malchius, and there becomes this rulership of the four kingdoms of the Goyim, Shehem Dalet Golius, which is symbolized by the four exiles that Bnei Israel went into. Umi yuchal lisboil eskoil hatzooko vahazooko hagidoilo kishenoifil b'chinas hamalchus b'chinas hachochma tato b'neim chasushon. Rabbi Nizal says, who could possibly stand the terrible scream and cry of the malchus when it falls into their hands, into their control? This malchus, which is an item of kedusha, when the forces of tumah grab hold of it and overpower it and take it to themselves in a way that they're not supposed to, it seems there's an unbelievable heart-rendering outcry from the Malchus that it's been taken captive. Bibichinois, as the Pasuk says, Za'akas Moishel Baksilim, the scream of a ruler among fools. In other words, when the Malchus Dikdusha has fallen into the hands of the Ksilim. Dahainu hazo'oko, this refers to that outcry, kishenoifel hamemsholo, when the kingdom, bechinas hamalchus, bechinas chochmatato, falls bein haksilim, among the fools. Meaning, shehaksil roitzel lehishakim, that the fool is trying to act smart. In other words, he's trying to act smarter than he really is. It means one who's not worthy of that chochmatato, taking hold of it and misusing it, using it in an ugly way, in a destructive way. Where these forces of tumah are trying to draw into their chochmois, which are really foolishness, they're trying to draw es bechinas hachochmo ha'amitis, bechinas chochmo tato kanal, this chochmo of emes, this malchus, this chochmo tato that we spoke about. So this brings forth a tremendous scream, a tremendous outcry from the Malchus itself, from the Shechina itself. Now Rabbi Nizal says, besides that outcry, besides the outcry of the Malchus, of the Shechina, v'gam yesh oid tzaoka gedoyla mizeh, there's an even worse scream. Dahainu shehashem yizborach kaviyochel bi'atzmoy shoyeg, where kaviyochel Hashem himself screams, meaning referring to a higher level of Hashem's presence than the Malchus, than the Chochmat HaTor. Kaviyochel, where the upper levels of Hashem, kaviyochel, scream out. Bebechinas, as the Pasuk says, shoyeg yishag al novehu, Hashem himself screams over his beauty. Al nove delay, referring to his beauty, shehu bechinas hamalchus shenoifel begolius shel dalet malchus. This refers to the malchus of kedusha, which is symbolized by the letter dalet. We said delesle migarma klum, when it falls into the hands of the dalet malchus, the four kings of tumah. Now, Rabbi Nizal says, so therefore, this is a tremendous problem, and this is a tremendous danger, that the fact that this Chochmat HaTor is so close to the Tumah, it seems that this is this happens at times that the malchus falls into the hands of the tumah. Whereas normally, under normal circumstances, the tumah is supposed to be drawing a certain minimal amount of chiyus, of sustenance and life from this malchus. There are times that because the Jews commit sins due to our actions, we allow the malchus of tumah, these forces of klipa or the goyim, to take more of the malchus than they're really supposed to have and grab it onto themselves, which results in golus for the Jews, which results in their chochmois being misgaber. Their chochmois, which are really foolishness, being misgaber. And Rav Nachman Shigrinsal explains in this Tarnikut Imran that one of the ways that this shows itself is certain times when you have cases of Jews trying to introduce chochmos of the goyim into the Torah. In other words, trying to use Greek philosophy, Rachmona Litzlan, or other junk, trying to bring that into the Torah and use that junk to explain, to give reasons and to give understanding to the mitzvos of Hashem. We learned earlier that the mitzvos, which represent this Chochmah Tator, which represent this Sechla Tachtoin, they are tzimtzumim, they're constrictions for Hasoga Selukus, for some super, super high-level wisdom of Hashem that's contained within these letters, within these words, within these paragraphs, within the Torah. You know, Torah Shebasav, Torah Shebal Peh. Now, when you have all kinds of people who fall into this disease, this problem, of trying not to find the Hasoga Selukus in the Torah, not trying to use the mitzvahs of the Torah and the writings of the Torah as a means of connecting with Hasoga Selukus, something much higher, but rather you see them going down and outside of Judaism, and trying to use that stuff to explain the Torah, or to understand the Torah, or to give meaning or give life to the Torah. That's caused by this. That's an example of this, whereby the Chochmah Tator fell. Where did it fall? It fell into the hands of the Chochmah Sagoyim. So that now we're using the Chochmah Sagoyim to explain the Chochmah Tator, which means the Tamei HaMitzvois. We said mitzvois was the Chochmah Tator. Shiurin the Asvan Doiraisa, we're using those Chochmah Chitzonius to try to understand and explain the mitzvahs of the Torah. And this is something that we take a very solid, clear, unwavering position on. The fact that today, as in the past 500 years or so, or possibly even earlier, dating back to the times of the Tanoim, there was this test that the Jewish people went through, that there was a certain percentage of Jews, of observant Jews, even Talmidei Chachamim, who fell into this problem. They fell into this ditch, into this mistake, into this pit of darkness, where the whole Mishle that was written by Shlomo HaMelech, in Mishle he constantly speaks about this theme of the woman of holiness, the Isha of Kedusha, the Eshes Chayil, etc. And he speaks about the Isha Zoyna, and all constantly using hundreds of terms to refer to this Isha Ra, and all this tricky woman, and all kinds of Isha Menaefes, all kinds of bad terms. And all the Sforim write that these two women represent these two opposing types of Chochmois. The Chochmah of the Torah, the Chochmah of Kedusha, the Chochmah that's based on the foundations of the Gemara, of the Sifrei Kabbalah, of these that style of learning, versus this strange woman, this other woman, which represents these other types of chochmos, this wisdom of philosophy, Greek philosophy or Egyptian, based on the old wisdoms that started in Egypt, based, Rav Nosson Zalman Likutei Halachos quotes the Arizal, who says that the foundation of this was the magicians, the magic, the wisdom of Kishuf, and all of these wisdoms of Tuma that Egypt had, that was the foundation upon which the Greeks built their philosophy. Their philosophy was an extension and a takeoff of that Tuma that existed in Mitzrayim being applied to brains. Like, in other words, taking all of those Tumais of Neuf and other things and now using that to think with, and this is what they burped out. This was the result. This was the vomiting forth of all their sins, taking people and being metame them in a very big way, and then putting brains on them, like, and having these people become the thinkers. And this from their perverted bodies which were filled with Taivois Rois and Midois Rois, the thought process that came forth from that was this type of philosophical thought. And again, a person would say, but then the way you're making it sound, it seems like only the nuttiest nut, the most unintelligent nerd, would possibly be connected with that. You know, how do smart people get involved in this? How do smart rabbis get involved in it? The answer is based on what we said before, that the Malchus of Klipa, the Malchus de Kedusha, is compared to the letter He, the last He of Hashem's name, Yud Kei Vav Kei, and when it gets pulled down into the hands of the Klipois, it becomes a Kuf. The word Kuf is Miloshin Koif, a monkey. It apes the Kedusha. The whole ability, the whole success of the Satan is based on his being able to dress himself up like Kedusha, as if this were also a wisdom. It sounds intelligent. They use three-syllable words and all kinds of flowery terminology that makes them sound important, intelligent, meaningful, smart. But really, it's total stupidity. It's people going around in circles, tying themselves up in knots, not improving. We find that people that get involved in that type of wisdom and that type of interpretation of the Torah, we see that it doesn't increase their Yirah Shamayim, it doesn't improve their fear of Hashem, their faith in Hashem. We see that it doesn't make them humble. All the attributes that the Torah says a Jew is supposed to get from wisdom, there's a mission in Pirkei Avos where Rabbi Meir says, Kol haloymeid Torah lishmo, any Jew who studies Torah properly, this is what's going to happen to them. And he lists a whole list. The person gets Ruach HaKodesh, the person becomes honest, the person becomes humble, true fear of Hashem, a whole list of things. Take a look at any of these type of people who get involved in this study of philosophy, if it's outside the Torah, or even if it's inside the Torah. Those people who study those mefarshim, which attempt to interpret the Torah and give it meaning and depth using these outside wisdoms, take a look at those people and take a look at that list in Pirkei Avos and see how far they are from that. See how different they are from that track. And this is where Reb Chaim Vitalzal, in the introduction to the writings of the Arizal, he says, because at that time there was some controversy. There were some people who came out and said, what's this business with the Arizal, with Kabbalah? This is some kind of a new track, and who knows, maybe this isn't the right path. Chaim Vitalzal said, I have one comment for all of those people. Let them take a mirror and look inside. Take this Mishnah that Rabbi Meir wrote about what's supposed to happen to a Jew who studies Torah properly, and let them see how far they are from that. And let them know that they're not the ones to be judging. They're not the ones to be passing judgment. Whereas if you look at my rabbi, you look at the Arizal, look at every single thing listed in that Mishnah, including Nevuah, prophecy, and Ruach HaKodesh, and you'll see he was the epitome of Shlemus, of what that Mishnah says is supposed to happen to somebody that studies Torah. So the question is, what do you mean? Those other people aren't studying Torah? The answer is they're studying a different Torah. In the Torah itself, the Gemara says that the Torah was presented in such a way, v'zois ha-Torah asher sum Moshe lefnei b'nei Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu presented the Torah to the Jews as sum. Sum in Hebrew means medicine. Sam chayim means medicine. And sum moves means poison. Moshe Rabbeinu presented this Sefer in such a way that a Jew will have free choice. Those Jews, or those people who have a rottenness inside of them in a sense, where they're not really looking to improve themselves, they're not really looking to serve Hashem, they're not really looking to become better people, better towards their fellow man, to become people who are concerned for others and want to give to others, to do all the things that the Torah says a Jew is supposed to want to be. Bein Adam L'Chaver, Bein Adam L'Mokoyim, those people who have no interest whatsoever in that, but rather, what is their interest? Their interest is arrogance. Their interest is being able to feel superior to less smart people or less deep thinkers. Or their interest is mental exercises. Again, some people are into bodybuilding. They spend 40 hours a day in gyms playing with their bodies to excess. And another person's into brain building, where their thing isn't showing off the body. It's showing off the brain. It has nothing to do whatsoever with pleasing Hashem or helping the Am Yisrael in any way. For those people, the Torah has also been presented. And the Torah makes itself available for them to lead themselves down into nothingness. You want to misuse the Torah? It's available for that also. It's available for a person to twist themselves into thinking that they're practicing Judaism, they're practicing the same religion as these tzaddikim, as the Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, Rabbi Akiva, these others, and they're doing it in luxury. They don't have to sacrifice. They don't have to give up any wealth. You know, they don't have to go for this for eating bread and water and all the different drachim that the Torah says a Jew who wants to be Koine Torah the right way has to be willing to undergo certain hardships and suffering. These people seem to show they can do it with the white gloves on and everything, keep themselves perfectly clean. They don't have to dirty themselves and soil themselves, but they're not getting the same Torah. It's not the same results. You see a product from this path, and you see a product from the other path, and you see that they're literally opposites. One, the more sechel you pour into them, the more knowledge, the more mitzvahs, the smaller they become, the humbler, the more they feel like nothing compared to Hashem, the more respect and love they feel for every other fellow Jew. And another person, you see every droplet that they learn, suddenly everybody else becomes like nothing to them. Everybody else is unimportant to them, insignificant, they know better, and certainly no interest in being mevatel themselves, not to Hashem and not to tzaddikim, not to either one. So now Rabbi Nezal says, "V'tzorich lirois lachtoich ulahavdil es bechinois hamalchus anal mibein hadalit golius." A Jew has to see to it to cut, to slice away the malchus from these dalit golius, from these Dalit Golios, these four exiles, and to elevate it from there. In other words, when the Klipois attach themselves to it and lock onto it, person has to be able to take a knife and cut the Malchus away from them. V'ikar alioso al yidei bechinois hachesed. The main way that a person picks up this fallen Malchus, this Malchus that fell into the hands of the Klipois, if you want to get it out of their possession and bring it back up, restore it to its place, outside the area of the Klipos, the key is through Chesed. Bebechinas, as the Pasuk says, V'huchan b'chesed kisei, that with kindness he will prepare a throne. So we see that the throne, which is the Malchus, its tikkun is through Chesed. Bechinas kitzru l'fi chesed, cut according to kindness, meaning shalidei ha-chesed, Koitzrin, v'choitchin es hadalit, through chesed, a person is given the ability to cut away, to slice away the malchus, which is this dalit of kedusha, umavdilin oisa mehem. And a person is zoche to separate the malchus, to distance the malchus from them, from the other side. Umalin oisa el oir haponim, and to elevate it to the oir haponim. Note, on a simple level, within the spheroids, this is obvious. The Oyer Haponim represents Chochma Bino Das, the brain. The Malchus is the bottom of Zeranpin, of that lower set that begins with Chesed and goes down to Malchus. When the Malchus falls to where it's not supposed to go to, you have to activate the Chesed, which is the top of that lower level of Chesed through Malchus. That's what can help the Malchus get out of the place of no good, the place of the Tumah, and be brought back to be part of the Kiddusha. Now Rabbi Nezal explains, again going back to Avraham Avinu. We showed earlier examples how Avraham Avinu was zeichet to the Chochmat HaTor. Now Rabbi Nezal says, V'alkein Avraham hoyo ish ha-chesed. Avraham Avinu, who we saw earlier, was an example of one who was zeichet to this Chochmat HaTor. Now we understand why another major ingredient in Avraham Avinu was chesed. V'hoyo mishtadel tomid la'asos chesed. Avraham Avinu was always busy doing chesed. Kidei la'alos b'chinas ha-malchus mehem, in order to rescue the malchus from them, from the hands of the tumah. V'alkein rodaf Avraham achar hadalet malachim. And it's for this reason that we find in the Torah that Avraham Avinu chased after four kings. When the four kings won the five kings in the Melchama, and they took Loit, as captive, the four kings captured Lot. Avram Avinu chased after the four kings, kedei lahachniyam, in order to defeat and lower those four kings. Shehem bechinas hadalet malchias the sitrachra, who represent the dalet malchias of the sitrachra. Where do we see? Let's see, a little sharp. We once had a shiur from the Zohar HaKadosh, where the Zohar HaKadosh explains exactly, if you look in the Chumash, what took place right before Avram Avinu went hunting, right before Avram Avinu went out to shoot up those four kings. The Torah mentions an incident that happened right before that. Note, his purpose for going after those four kings was to rescue Lot. Who is Lot? Lot is the Malchus of Kedusha. Lot was the one who, through relations with his daughters, came forth Moav. Moav is Me'av, from my father. One of the daughters named her child Moav, meaning that the child came from her father. From Moav came forth Rus. From Rus comes Dovr HaMelech. From Dovr HaMelech comes Moshiach. So what Avram Avinu was really after when he was chasing those four kings to save Lot was to save the Malchus of Kedusha, to take out the Malchus of Kedusha from the hands of these four Malchios of Klipa, of Tuma. What took place right before that? No. After that, the Torah tells the story of the three angels coming to Avram Avinu as guests. They came to be his guests, and he fed them and everything. They had a beautiful meal, dinner and everything. And then they said, by the way, guess what we're here for? One of our major missions now is we're going to take Sedoim and we're going to turn it into cheese. We're going to take the whole Sedoim and do a real nice number on it. So the Zohar HaKadosh asks, what's the connection between these two? Why first Avram Avinu having this Hachnosis Orachim, and then they're going to destroy Sedoim? The Zohar HaKadosh answers, Lot himself was a Rasha. The word Lot, Latya in Aramaic, means cursed, Arur. So Lot was a Rasha. On what Zuchus was Lot going to be saved? They wanted to destroy a whole city and save one guy. He needed a Zuchus to save him. He had zero Zuchus. So on whose zechus was he going to be saved? On the zechus of the tzedakah of Avram Avinu. The gemilas chesed. The chesed that Avram Avinu did when he was sick. Third day of his bris milah, he was in tremendous physical pain. And three Arabs came to his house. The malachim looked like Arabs. And he fed them. And he showed such extraordinary chesed to them. That's what saved Lot. Said very clearly. In Chumash Bereishis, Kapitel Yutes, Pasuk Choftes, the Pasuk says, "Vayhi b'shaches Elokim es orei hakikor." It was when Hashem destroyed those five cities, Sedoim and its other buddies. "Vayizkor Elokim es Avraham." Hashem remembered Avraham. "Vayishalach es Lot mitoich hafecha b'hafoich es orim asher yoshebem Lot." And he rescued Lot from this overturning of cities. When Hashem turned over the cities in which Lot should have said, Hashem remembered Lot and he saved him. Hashem remembered Avraham and he saved Lot. The Zohar HaKadosh says that there are times when chas v'shalom, a tragedy is about to happen to a person, a certain terrible thing. And sometimes the person needs a schus to be saved from the tragedy. So Hashem sends the person an opportunity to do a gemilas chesed, to take guests into the house, or some form of tzedakah or chesed. And the reason why that's being sent to the person is because if the person succeeds in doing that mitzvah, that'll rescue them from this impending doom that's supposed to hit them. Because without this chesed, they don't have a shot. They don't have a schus at that time. So Hashem sends the opportunity. If the person takes it, it can either save them or a member of their family. Here, Lot wasn't even a son. He was a nephew. And Avram Avinu's Achnosas Orchim was enough to save Lot. So we see that's on one level. On one level, Gemilas Chesed, Stoka, saving somebody else. It fits in beautifully with what Rabbein Azal is saying here. Rabbein Azal says that when the Malchus is taken captive by the Malchus of Klipa, the only way the Sphira that can take the Malchus of Klipa, the Malchus out of the Klipa is Chesed. V'huchan b'chesed kisei. Here's an example. Lot was taken captive. The only Lot from whom was going to come forth Moshiach, The only way to save Loit was through Avram Avinu turning on the Chesed. His Chesed, his Achnos Sarchim, was what cut away the Malchus from the Dalet Malchus of Klipa.
What about, how was the fact that Loit also engaged in the Achnos Sarchim with the angels? Is that
to a degree, to a much lesser degree, obviously, because the Torah punches a lot of holes into what he did. His Achnos Sarachim, compared to Avram Avinu's Achnos Sarachim, was terrible. No, it's the fact that he didn't do, you know, again, his name, Lakia, means cursed. He was obviously a bad person, no question about it. And yet from him was in him was a potential that from him would come forth Moshiach. Probably that's part of it. But as far as I know, the Zohar HaKadosh mentions that Bedafka, look what the Pasuk says. Hashem remembered Avraham and saved Loit. Not that Hashem saw the schus of Loit Sachnos Sarchim. Hashem remembered Avraham and that's what saved Loit.
You said a person needs a schus sometimes to get him out of a jam. And in this case, I mean, Avraham had an entire lifetime full of chesed and this mitzvah. Why did he, like, without this, he didn't have enough schus to...
It seems that this is what we learn from this lesson, that at such a time when there's a din, when a whole city is going to be destroyed, and you want to pull one guy out of there, it seems you need some kind of an extra thing. It's non-standard. The fact that somebody's been a tzaddik his whole life isn't enough, and I'm mentioning this as I'm saying it. There's a very important point that I've heard recently stressed very much by today's tzaddikim. There are many times that a person knows that, let's say, they give tzedakah regularly and they're doing mitzvahs regularly, and then chas v'shalom, something happens to them, something terrible happens to them, and the person asks a tzaddik to be mispal for them. And the person feels that, it's not as if I'm a regular, like I give every day or every week. So I don't really think I have to give anything extra, let's say, for tzedakah, or do anything special extra now because of this problem. Because I'm always giving, I give regularly. And the answer is, it's a mistake in a sense. Because what a person gives always is giving always. It's important and it's excellent and it's wonderful. But when a person sees that they're being hit with a particular tzara, or a particular problem, that's a signal from Hashem. That something extra is needed, plain and simple. That based on all your regular merits, it still justified this problem coming your way, period. So it's not that you can assume that I'm simply going to continue doing what I've been doing till now, and it's okay, or the schus of the tzedakas that I gave last year, let's say last year I gave $50,000 donation, now that something happens to me, I don't have to give some extra donation now because I'm one of the biggest donors, that kind of thing. The answer is, it's a mistake. What you did before is excellent, and it's wonderful, and it's locked away, it's kosher. But uvetuvoy mechadesh b'chol yom tamed maasei bereishis. Every day is a new creation. Every day is a new world and a new life. And if a person sees a particular new tzara, a person has to be prepared at times to deal with it brand new. Not to assume that I'm going to fall back on my schusim of the past, but rather it's a whole new battle. And you see this by Yaakov Avinu, by other tzaddikim. When something came their way, you didn't see them assuming that all the schusim of the past would help them. Yaakov Avinu said, how do I know if my earliest schusim are enough? And right away he went to work. He rolled up his sleeves and really went to work to prepare for meeting Esav. Person would say, what for? His whole life was a preparation for meeting Esav. And yet when that actual meeting is about to take place, it requires whole brand new hachonis and brand new koichos. It's not enough to fall back on what the person did before. And again, this is a certain clarity that a person could sometimes make a mistake on their own unless a person zochet to hear, exactly the right way. Now Rabbi Nizal says, Ki Avraham hoya soine momoin. Again, another outstanding quality of Avraham Avinu was that he despised somebody else's money. He showed his despise for the money of Sdoim. When the king of Sdoim offered him, take what you want, this, that, Avraham Avinu said, take nothing. I don't want any of your money or any of your wealth. Imichut vatzroich now. I wouldn't take a thread from you or a shoelace. So that you shouldn't be able to say that you made Avraham Avinu rich. again, implying an attitude that a person doesn't want somebody else's. I want what Hashem has to give me. I'm not looking to take anything away from somebody else. Or if I see somebody else have something that I don't have, there's no thought in my mind that that's related to me in any way. Ki Avraham tikein shachris. Because the Gemara tells us that Avraham Avinu was mesakein the tefillah of shachris in the morning. Rabbeinu Zal says, Bechinas shachrus anal. The word shachris also is miloshen shachar, blackness, referring to that chokhmat hatoh that we learned about earlier. Shehu bechinas sechla tachtoin kanal. Bechinas chokhmat hatoh, shehu bechinas shachrus kanal. Avraham Avinu was the one who the fact that the Torah tells us he was mesakein shachris means that he was zeichet to this tikkun of shachar, of blackness, of chokhmat hatov, of malchus. Shezoiche lesakin bechinazois al yedei soine botza kanal. We learned earlier how is a person zeichet to establish their malchus, their chokhmat hatov, through this quality of soine botza, person showing that they despise money that's not theirs. The alkein yotzo me Avraham Yitzchok v'Yishmoel Yaakov v'Esav. Rabbi Nizal says now it's for this reason that from Avraham Avinu came forth four. Yitzchak, Yishmael, were his two sons, and Yaakov and Esav were his two grandsons. Shehem bechinas keneged arbo bonim dibra Torah. These are the ones where the Torah says, where the Haggadah, we say in the Haggadah on Pesach, that the Torah is speaking about four basic sons. Echod chacham, v'echod rosho, v'echod tom, v'echod sheni de'alishoel. These are the four, the wise one, the rosho, the sincere one, and the one that doesn't know how to ask. Shehem keneged dalid malchios shebigdusha kiyadua. These four correspond to the four kingdoms of holiness. The four malchios of kedusha, they correspond also to the four worlds. Atzilus, bria, yitzira, and asiya. Rabbeinu Zal explains now. So Avraham Avinu was mesakein the four. Yitzchok zebechinas ben chacham. Yitzchok Avinu represents the ben chacham. That's corresponding to the Olam Hu'atzilus. Ki Yitzchok al shem hatzchoik v'hasimcha. Yitzchok was named for laughter, for joy. Bechinas ben chacham yismachov. The pasuk says in Mishlei that a person who zeichet to a son that's a chacham, the father is happy. So we see that tzchoik comes from chokhmah. So Yitzchok Avinu corresponds to chokhmah, which is the highest world, the ben chacham. Esav hu ben rasha. Esav represents the son who's the rasha, corresponding to the lowest of the worlds, the olam ha'asiya. It's called asiya. Esav is miloshen asiya, referring to this lowest of the worlds. Now note, why is the rasha right next to the chacham? This ties in with what we said earlier, that Rabbeinu Zal says the lower a person is, the more ill a person is, the bigger a doctor they need to cure them. The worse the rasha is, the more he needs a greater tzaddik to be mesaken him. Rabbeinu Zal said that when the Jews were in Egypt and they were on the 49th level of tumah, they needed the biggest tzaddik possible. Only Moshe Rabbeinu could help them, could save them. So too the Arizal says that because of the fact that the Olam Ho'asiyah is so low and so steeped in Tumah, the only thing that could sustain it and be misaking it is the light coming from the Olam Ho'atzilus. That's why in the Haggadah, the Rosha is written next to the Chacham. Normally the Rosha belongs at the end, but here the Rosha is put next to the Chacham to show that the Asiyah draws from Atzilus. Yaakov hu bechinas ben tam. Yaakov Avinu represents the son who's the tam. The pasuk says Yaakov ish tam yoshev oyalim, corresponding to the olam habriya. And here our Rebbe Zichron Avrocha mentioned in his shiurim on the tapes that in the Kitzel Likutei Moran, Rav Nosson Zal brings there that Yaakov Avinu corresponds to the olam hayitzira. Whereas our Rebbe Zichron Avrocha said that if you look in the Kisvei Arizal, it seems in certain places that the Arizal says that Yaakov Avinu corresponds to Bria, it's Yishmoel, that's Yitzira. But in any case here, Rabbeinu Zal says Yaakov is the Bechina of Ben Tam, Kemoi Shekosu V'Yaakov Ish Tam. Tam is also Miloshen Emes, Titein Emes Liyaakov. Yishmoel hu Bechinas Ben She'enu Yedei Elishoel. Whereas Yishmoel represents the son who doesn't know how to ask, representing the Olam Hayetzira, which is Toivora, good and bad mixed together. Ki Yishmoel Oso Tshuva, Because the Gemara says, we had this in this week's Parsha, coincidence. The last psukim of this past week's Parsha show that Yishmael did tshuva. Because when the Torah talks about Yitzchok Avinu and Yishmael going to bury Avram Avinu, the pasuk says that Yitzchok and Yishmael went to bury him. The Gemara says, what do you mean? Yishmael was 13 years older. He let Yitzchok go before him? Yes. And that was his tshuva. Tshuva means when a person recognizes Kovod HaTorah, the Kovod for a Talmud Chacham. The fact that Yishmael let Yitzchok Avinu go before him, that's what showed that he had done real tshuva. K'moshom Razal, as the Gemara says, so he represents this She'eino Yedea Lishoel, Rabbi Nizal is going to show now. V'ikra HaTshuva hi bebechinas She'eino Yedea Lishoel. The main concept, the main shlemus of tshuva is when a person does tshuva even for what they didn't know they did wrong. She'eino yodea lishoil. Rabbi Nizal says, Hainu laso is tshuva v'lishoil tshuva me'ashem yisborach al she'einom yiduim. Lishoil means to ask for forgiveness al she'eino yodea. She'eino yodea kama lishoil. Even to ask forgiveness for what I don't even know I did wrong. That's the epitome of tshuva. Regular tshuva is a person says, I did something wrong, I'm willing to apologize. You want me to apologize for what I don't even know I did wrong? I'm not interested. That's a person who still has a little bit of gaiva. But a person who's zechut to real tshuva means I'm nothing, and I know I've done so many things wrong. I know that I know so little that most probably I don't even know a number of things that I did wrong. There must be millions of things that I did wrong that I don't even know about yet. So that's the shezeh ikar hatshuva. That's the highest height of tshuva. Bebechinas asher loy gozalti oz oshiv. What I didn't steal, I'm looking to return. In other words, on that which I don't even know I stole, that I did something wrong, I'm looking to do tshuva. I'm looking to return. Vezeh bechinas Avraham tikein shachris. Now, when the Gemara makes a statement that Avram Avinu was the one who was misakin tefillah shachris, Yitzchok Avinu was misakin mincha, and Yaakov Avinu was misakin marav, when it says that Avram Avinu was misakin shachris nutrikin chacham rosho tam she'eino yodea. The word shachris has in it the first letters of these four children, the chacham, the tam, the rosho, and the she'eino yodea lishoel. Shehein bechinas hadalit malchus kanal. These four represent the malchus of kedusha. We know that Avram Avinu is considered the first king in a sense of Bnei Yisrael. We said that the 14th generation of kings after Avram Avinu was David HaMelech. David is bigimatria 14. Shlomo HaMelech is the 15th king. He represents the Levona Bishlemus. Just like on the 15th day of the month, the moon is Bishlemus. So too, Shlomo HaMelech, who was the 15th king, the 15th generation from Avram Avinu, he represents Shlemus HaMalchus. So we see that Avram Avinu was the one who by establishing these four sons, he established the Malchus of Kedusha, which is this Dalit, which is called Shachrus, blackness, darkness, like the pupil of the eye, this Basayin, which represents this Sechel HaTachtoin. We'll hold it over here now. Any questions?
Ben Zal said that the inheritance of the Ikar Tshuva is what you don't know specifically, and it's doing Tshuva even on that which you don't know about.
Even.
Ikar Tshuva.
The word ikor here is not being, that's why I tried to explain. The word ikor here is not being used to mean that that's the main. The word ikor here is being used that you want to know what the climax of tshuva is like. The highest height is when a person not only did everything he was supposed to do to correct all the sins he knows about, the vidui dvorim and all of that, which is super tikkun amalchus, but he's even willing to go further. He's even looking to make a tikkun for the she'eino yodeas. That represents a real Baal Tshuva, where not only is he mitbayesh from what he knows he did wrong, but he's so pure, he's reached such a level of desire to serve Hashem, that he even feels embarrassment for what he doesn't know he did. And you see this in people that have children, know this, that when a child does something wrong, that they really believe, everybody, Rabbi Nizal has a place in Sikh Saran where he says everybody has their line. Everybody has their definition of yashrus. One person is only willing to steal up to $1,000. Like, he would never steal more than $1,000. Or he'd never rip off a person who has less than $50,000. From the rich, he's willing to steal, you know, but if he sees a person who has only 50, from him, Each person has what they call where they draw their line, their level of yashrus. So a person, according to where they draw the line, if you ask him, did you do something wrong? He'll say, no, baloney. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Otherwise, I wouldn't have done it. Because I think that's okay. I think it's wrong if you steal from the poor. But to steal from the rich, what do you mean? They don't. Who says he's supposed to be richer than me? That whole thing. And so to each one on their own level, you know, in terms of willing to admit to wrongdoing, you know, at a certain place. Whereas, and especially we said the example of kids, you tell a kid they did something wrong, if they know that they did something really bad, if the kid is honest and good, he'll admit he did something wrong. If it's somewhere in between, or if that this child isn't smart enough, intelligent enough to understand that this is wrong or how wrong it is, He's looking to argue. I don't feel sorry, you know. And a chutzpah that shows a certain lack of anivus, a certain lack of busha, a certain lack of purity. There's a certain purity where you see a person is pure to the extent that they don't think they know it all. They don't assume, just because I don't know that there's something wrong with this, if somebody older approaches me and says, do you know that what you did was wrong? My first reaction isn't, well, he doesn't know what he's talking about. First reaction, what am I, crazy? This person's 30 years older than me. They've lived so much longer than me. Obviously, they've seen things I haven't seen. And most probably, they understand things that I don't understand. So if I don't think I did something wrong, and that person does, my first reaction is, I'm sorry. I'm willing to trust his wisdom, not my. I'm assuming his wisdom is more than my wisdom. So too with Hashem. When it comes to dealing with Hashem, a person assumes that they know they did two or three things wrong, so I'm willing to give Hashem three apologies and no more. That's if Hashem is a little guy. If Hashem is somebody small, then how much could I have done wrong against Hashem? How disrespectful could I have been to Hashem? The answer is, if Hashem is so big, then I did so much wrong. But if I say that Hashem is so big that I can't even begin to imagine how big Hashem is, then in terms of my thinking I was disrespectful to Hashem, I have to assume that my thinking is much less than what it really is. Compared to how great Hashem really is, if I think I showed Hashem 20 levels of disrespect, probably it's 2,000 or 2 million relative to how great Hashem is. Oh, that's the point.
Back to Albert, when he saw the Malchus of Lot, then why did he not keep him with him?
The answer is that's the greatness of a tzaddik. The Gemara says that when it comes to dealing with children or with students, for example, a person has to know smoil doiche yemin makarev. A person has to push away with the left hand and bring close with the right hand. And there's a whole wisdom to knowing exactly what that means in terms of knowing how far to keep a person away. Tzaddikim have to maintain a certain respect, keep themselves apart to a degree, and on the other hand, try very much to bring people close. Avram Avinu understood exactly where Lot was at that time, and by seeing certain things that Lot was doing terribly wrong, he understood that at that time the right thing to do was to distance himself, to move away from Lot, or to get Lot to move away from him. Not denying that in Lot was sparks of Kedusha, from which there would be the whole future Malchus of Klal Yisrael. That would come out later. First, Lot would have to take a beating of being taken captive by those four kings, and the suffering that he went through in that would be part of the ticket to make him ready to be rescued and brought back, you know, etc.